Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. Today, we have an episode talking about Hollywood's role in depicting climate in a new study produced by a media consultancy showing how well Hollywood is doing at showcasing climate. This episode was really fun for me to make because I didn't really know and don't really know much about this space, but after talking to our guest speaker, I definitely understand the role that Hollywood has in shaping what we know about climate, how we feel about climate. So it's really interesting. And just how we talk about climate, like how normalized it is in our society. So really appreciated this episode. And let's get right into it then and talk about who we have on the podcast today and where they work. So our guest speaker today is Carmielle Banoski, who is a critically acclaimed novelist and TV writer, bringing her expertise across genres, as well as her years of climate activism, to her work with Good Energy, a nonprofit story consultancy that helps Hollywood address the climate crisis. Carmielle staffed on the Amazon TV series Undone, for which she wrote a climate-related episode. She recently developed and was head writer on The Last City, a climate sci-fi podcast. She co-wrote a short film, which will be premiering at the Tribeca Film Festival, and she is a Film Independent Fellow. She had the opportunity to explore the Arctic on a sailing vessel, studying and writing about climate change. Prior to Los Angeles, Carmielle spent 4 years on the road at writing fellowships, and she tried super hard to open a Planned Parenthood in Mississippi. She's the author of the novel The Suicide of Claire Bishop. Other writing has appeared, among other places, in The Guardian, Variety, LA Review of Books, and on NPR. She earned her MFA from Hunter College, where she was a professor of creative writing. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest speaker, Carmielle.
Hi, so thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today.
You're welcome. I'm super happy to be here.
Yeah, so can we get right into it? And, you know, can you tell us a little bit about Good Energy and what Good Energy does?
Yes, I'm excited to tell you all about us. We're a nonprofit story consultancy that helps writers and producers integrate climate into any genre. So we work with writers and showrunners, studios, streamers, industry organizations on shows and films. And that can be all the way from ideation of stories to scripts and world building. And we take this comprehensive look at how climate change affects every issue of a story, every aspect of a story, and that it can be, you know, organically woven in. So never shoehorning. Yeah, really put story first. We come from where a writer is, and we help them integrate wherever that makes sense. We also published the playbook for screenwriting on the age of climate change that I can get into. And I was really proud to be head writer on that and collaborated with scientists and psychologists to create this open source resource for any storyteller. And so we hope that can inspire and inform writers and creators and just show how climate can be a part of any story. So we started really from knowing that Hollywood has the power to change the world. It's done so in the past. There's been so many ways that we take for granted that Hollywood has changed our lives. You know, we have designated drivers because of Hollywood, for instance, and we have gay marriage because of, you know, in part because of Hollywood. So we just saw that there was this large absence of climate change in our on-screen stories, that Hollywood was approaching so many issues so boldly and radically in stories, but climate change was missing. So we did this study with the USC Norman Lear Center's Media Impact Project, and we looked at the frequency of how much the term climate change was coming up in on-screen stories. And we looked at all sorts of other terms as well. And we found that only 2.8% of scripted media ever mentioned the term climate change. And then in this recent report that I'm sure we'll get into, that we're going to talk about today, we found that only 9.6% include characters who are aware of climate change. So that's clearly not the reality that we're living in. The climate affects all of us. So Good Energy really asks, you know, why aren't we seeing more stories talking about the climate crisis? So we did hundreds of qualitative interviews with writers and other people in the entertainment industry, and we found that people were feeling really blocked, like writer's blocks, but climate blocks. So some people think of it like as a divisive issue that is too political. So much of that is fueled by fossil fuel narrative strategies. And a lot of writers felt like they had to be a climate expert. They were afraid of getting it wrong, or they felt like they had to tackle the whole climate crisis and not just one aspect, not coming from a personal place. So really at Good Energy, our approach is to break down those blocks. And we want creatives to know that any story can include climate change, big and small ways, without even being about climate change. And that can be just as powerful. That's mainly what we do. We really want creatives to know that and understand that they can show through their work that climate change affects all of us, if unequally. You know, it touches every part of our lives, from our city streets to health to jobs to our air and water. It touches every issue that we already care about and are fighting for. You know, it exacerbates divisions and problems facing already marginalized groups. So given all of that, that climate touches all of these issues, it isn't even an issue in and of itself. It's not a standalone issue. It is part of every issue. We see that it can be woven into any story, that it can be in the background of any story or mentioned in dialogue, all the way to a more substantial part of the story. And all of that normalizes the conversation around climate change and helps us out of this silence around climate change that we're in.
Wow, yeah, I love that. It's like, for me, I find it so interesting because I've never really thought about this topic. And, you know, when I hear storytelling, like, I always think of like David Attenborough, like documentaries and like social media, like influencers. And I think it's so interesting to think about, you know, when we watch movies that aren't like climate focused, how just like throwing in certain like climate terminology can really impact us. And like you said before, it impacts so many things in our world and in our lives already, and Hollywood already impacts us in so many ways that it's so interesting and so needed to add climate into these discussions and into these movies that we love and we see.
Exactly. Like, climate is not just a documentary. It is, you know, could be part of any heist movie, you know. So
yeah. And it's a thank you for opening my mind to that, because, you know, I like, for me personally, like, I've also never thought of this. So I think it's really awesome that you're here sharing this all with us. And you mentioned the playbook for screenwriting in the age of climate change. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what that is and what it does.
Yes. So the playbook is this open source free resource for writers or creatives or anyone interested in approaching the climate crisis in their work, in any kind of storyteller. It includes character profiles. We interviewed climate activists and scientists and journalists and people on the front lines, and kind of created character arcs out of their lives to show that, wow, this can be just such a fascinating topic for a film or TV show. There's Climate Science 101 pieces. There's a piece called Greenhouse Gaslighting about all the kind of insidious ways that the fossil fuel industry has been a part of the media landscape for so long, and kind of has taught us how to think and how we can kind of undo that gaslighting, and we can rethink how we tell our stories. We also have pieces, projections into the future, written with a climate scientists and futurists, and just everything in there has the purpose of informing and inspiring creatives to show that there are just many, many ways that climate could be woven in this organic way.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And, you know, you also help create workshops for helping screenwriters integrate climate into projects with joy and humor. So is that similar what you do with that? Is like, can you explain that a little bit and what goes into something like that as well?
Yeah, we offer workshops. We just gave one at Sundance, and we give them to studios and other groups of writers. And it's a kind of hands-on way to bring the playbook to life in some ways. Well, we have the Climate Lens workshop. So that's our main offering. And we go through different case studies of shows and films that already are portraying the climate crisis in entertaining and artful ways. And then we also have a mock writer's room inside that workshop where people can kind of get hands-on and get creative and think about the ways that they would integrate the climate crisis, like into TV show that's off the air now. We sometimes use Friends or The Sopranos. So it's not meant to be boring or scary. We really believe that, I mean, yes, the climate crisis is incredibly scary, and we're going to encounter every emotion under the sun as we enter this climate future. So can we still enjoy ourselves and get creative while we're trying to find solutions and tell stories about this? And can our characters also reflect that whole spectrum of emotions? So it's not just doom and gloom. So we want our workshops to be fun in the way that we hope that writing and entertaining stories are also fun and run the gamut on the kinds of emotions that they evoke from audiences. And we also offer workshops kind of tailored to different groups. So we've given them in Canada, tailored to Canadian media. And we are currently working on a DEIJ workshop with our partners at the Center for Cultural Power and Hip Hop Caucus. And so that one's going to focus on race and climate, the intersection of race and climate, and kind of lifting a lens to any story thinking about that intersection. We want to offer other workshops that also touch on different intersections like gender and climate. And so we're really excited about that.
Yeah, I think that's so important to have resources like this, because, you know, many people are aware of the climate crisis and that climate change is here, but they don't necessarily know all the technicalities behind it. And we don't need to know the technicalities behind it, but someone who's trying to display that or trying to project that into the world, it might feel overwhelming. So I think it's awesome to have and to offer workshops and resources like this. So great job on that to you all. I think that's so awesome. And also like touching on like the doom and gloom part, I think so many people we doom scroll. I've heard that word a lot, like doom scrolling, just go on social media and seeing all the bad. And that's like another part, like you said, that media can play into is picturing a hopeful future and providing that hope, and that it's not just all downhill from here, right? We have another option. There's a better future is possible. So I think that's really important as well. So thank you for touching on that. And something I feel like this is like playing into everything that we're talking about right now, but I've heard this word called climate fiction. So what exactly is climate fiction, and where does it play a role in this?
Well, in terms of good energy, we actually tend not to use the terms climate fiction or climate story for the reason that I mentioned before, that writers are creatives often wrongly think that they have to be an expert on the subject. So we don't want to scare anybody away saying we want more climate stories and we only want climate focused stories. We want stories that reflect our reality. So we want stories that touch on the climate, that integrate it in any way that makes sense to that writer. That said, we also love climate centered stories. So climate fiction, I would say, is a climate-centered story. And there's been so much of that, especially in the literary world, really amazing novels coming out. I myself also mostly write climate-centered stories. So that's where I also love to help writers integrate it and or center their story around climate, and that can really look like climate change affecting and driving the main character of the story and therefore moving the plot.
Yeah, and you know, I also see that you're working on this really cool, amazing new project, being the head writer of The Last City, a new climate fiction podcast on Wandry that comes out on April 22nd. But when this airs, it will already have been April 22nd. So it is out. I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about this project. It sounds so cool and so awesome.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this and proud of it. The Last City is a climate-centered sci-fi audio drama, and it takes place in 2072 when the climate crisis is, of course, much worse. And a few hundred people are lucky to live in the city called Pura, this green haven-domed smart city where you have an AI therapist as your best friend with you all the time. And, you know, everything's just perfect under this dome. But of course, is it perfect? And the story follows Demetria, the young PR fixer for the city, and she stumbles on this dark secret that underpins Pura's existence, and she has to decide, you know, what and whom she's fighting for. So it's really, it's a climate story, but it's about mother issues. Her mom is played by Rae Seahorn from Better Call Saul, and it's about friendship, and there's a queer love story, and it's really an investigation of my own worries about our reliance on technology to get us out of this mess. So Demetria's father figure is kind of an Elon Musk type who thinks he can save the world and, you know, initially has good intentions, but of course it all goes terribly wrong and people get hurt. But yeah, I worked on this for a couple years with Wondery, and we're just so excited to have it finally out in the world.
Yeah, I'm very excited to listen to it. I think that would be so awesome. So is that like an example of climate fiction, or is that not what you would call this?
Yeah, this is definitely an example of climate fiction. And yeah, it's climate-centered stories for sure. And it's also, you know, we're going to talk about the climate reality check, I'm sure. It also definitely passes the climate reality check. So, so that's exciting to be able to use our test, you know, for my own work and make sure I'm passing it.
So yeah, let's definitely start talking about that. I'm very interested to hear about this. So Good Energy, where you work, in partnership with Colby College's Buck Lab for Climate and Environment, recently released a report titled Climate Reality on Screen, The Climate Crisis in Popular Films. So what is this report about, and what did your findings show you?
Yeah, so we've been working on the climate reality check for a while. It was one of our offerings that we realized that writers and creators really needed. They needed a simple test, to just a base level test, to think about how they're integrating climate or how often climate is integrated. So the climate reality check asks whether climate change exists and if a character knows it. So we found in this, the climate reality check was used by Buck Labs to test and analyze the top 250 films as per IMDb from the last decade, so 2013 to 2022. And the main finding was that climate change in film is rare and it's increasing and it's profitable. So these were just very exciting findings. So starting with climate change being rare, we found that 9.6% of the 250 films that passed, that we studied, passed both parts of the climate reality check. We found that 12.8% passed the first part, so climate change exists, and that 3.6% passed the second part. So only 3.6% show really a character that knows it. But climate has doubled really in frequency in the last half of the decade that was studied. So in the first half of the decade, 8% of the films passed. And in the second half, 17.6% of the films passed. So it truly increased. And in the first half of the decade, interestingly, they were mostly superhero films. In the second half, they really ran the gamut and started touching more on the ways that climate is truly part of our lives, rather than like big epic world ending thing where we only need a superhero to save us. So that was just a super interesting finding for us. We also found that films that include climate change were profitable. So films that passed part one of the test, Climate Change Exists, performed 8% better in the box office than films that didn't. Films that passed part two, that a character knows it, performed 10% better in the box office than films that didn't. So really for us, this shows that it's not a divisive issue. There's no audience members or no large amount of them that's going to say, no, I'm not going to go see that movie because climate's in it. So we hope that that shows people that this isn't something they need to be afraid of including. And then other really interesting findings were that streamers had the highest percentage. And of the big five studios, Warner Brothers films had nearly a quarter, so 23.3%. And the other thing that really stood out for me and what I think that writers will get the most out of, and maybe is also interesting for audience members, is that the results revealed that the demographics of characters who are aware of climate change definitely do not reflect reality. But basically, the majority of people who are shown to be aware of climate change in on-screen stories are white and male and middle-aged. And in reality, we know that's so different, that the majority of people who are affected by climate change are Black and Brown people, that the people who care about climate change are mostly young people. We also found that only 2% of the films contain characters who are experiencing climate change anxiety. So many people are experiencing climate anxiety right now. So we hope that these kinds of findings show that there's so many more stories that can be told. Like to me, I read these findings and I see creative opportunity. So what are the real stories? Like we haven't seen those yet. Those are stories that are fascinating and aren't didactic, that are just entertaining and can interest so many audience members. So for me, those findings are inspirational.
Yeah, that is very inspirational. I think hearing, like you said, a lot of people are concerned with profits and how much profit can they make, and people are afraid that, okay, climate isn't going to make them money. Or I hear a lot of people talking about how like climate related things, sustainability related things, environmental related things cost so much money, or they're going to make us lose money, whatever it is. So hearing that it is profitable is a good thing. And I know that's not the only thing that we can focus should focus on. It's not the only important thing, but I think that is something that is important to discuss because not many people would think that. I mean, for me, I wouldn't think that either. And I've been in the climate space for a while. So I think that's really refreshing to hear as well, and along with all the other statistics you just told us about as well. So can you tell us a little bit, give us some examples of the films that were used in the study? Because I think about like when I've watched shows and movies, and I've like heard references once in a while, and I'm like, I don't like I think about it then because I'm like, ah, another person's thinking about it too. Like I'm not alone. But I can't really like think on the top of my head besides the movie Don't Look Up, which I think of many people, relate to as being a big climate kind of related film. So can you give us some examples?
Yes, definitely. So yes, Don't Look Up. And speaking of, what you're talking about, feeling like not alone when you see a film that mentions climate, I think a lot of audience members feel that way. So Don't Look Up was such a great example of, for me, as like I felt like it was a love letter to climate activists, right? Yeah, some of the films that passed in the first half of the decade were Snowpiercer, Pacific Rim, Interstellar. The second half of the decade, Parasite only passed the first half of the test, for instance, because it's woven into the story world, but the characters don't necessarily know that that's happening. Midsommar, Marriage Story, Fast and the Furious, Pokemon, Detective Pikachu is a great example of a kids' film that integrates it. Coda, and in more recent years, Glass Onion and Triangle of Sadness. So Glass Onion, the villain Miles Braun has this untested hydrogen scheme, and he is, of course, another, tech guru that we need to be wary of, is trying to make billions and say he's trying to save the world. But really it's a would be a very scary future in his hands. But climate change is really the backdrop of that film. And then Triangle of Sadness is another great example because it's a super quick mention and quick joke at the top of the movie where a character says hashtag climate change, but it really sets the stage for the themes of the film, which are all about greed and consumerism and the roots of climate change. So other examples are Aquaman, a lot of other big superhero movies, Godzilla versus Kong, The Eternals, Justice League, and those were all in the more recent half of the decade.
Awesome. So how do you feel that adding and introducing climate change in fiction and in these movies makes a difference? Because I know we talked about it a little bit, but what difference do you think it makes?
Well, there's really this spiral of silence around climate change that people don't know that other people do care. 75%, I think, is the number of Americans care and are concerned about the climate crisis. I think the number is way higher globally. And yet other surveys have shown that people don't believe that other people care. So showing the climate crisis in films and TV will normalize talking about it, will get people talking about it, will show that the characters that we love also care about it. Audiences right now, we found out through that same USC study and survey, they want to see characters reflecting their concern and they're not. So I do think, again, this is this creative opportunity for creatives to start integrating the climate crisis, but from the place of like what they see as reality. What is their reality? Is it climate anxiety? Is it seeing their home change? Catherine Hayhoe, this great climate scientist, says that the main thing we can do to fight climate change is to talk about it. And film and TV gets people talking about it. It breaks the silence. So I think it's so hugely important. And of course, there's just this history of narrative change that Hollywood has been at the forefront of. So there's some really great examples like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You know, researchers found that that show decreased negative feelings of audience members towards Black people. And it was just, this show made that difference over that period of time. Will and Grace, Will and Grace was so successful normalizing the relationships, and it's kind of credited with, you know, laying the groundwork for the Marriage Equality Act to pass. You know, Julia Child's gas stoves were, you know, integrated into all of her TV shows. That was sponsored by the American Gas Association. It's credited with influencing millions of viewers, you know, in obviously the negative direction of using gas instead of electricity. So it's just, you know, we wouldn't have designated drivers without it. We would have more drunk driving accidents without Hollywood. I truly believe that there's all these studies to back it up. So I do think Hollywood is just positioned to make such a huge difference. And we need to start doing that right now.
Yeah, and I find it interesting, you know, talking about climate silence, because it's something that I think every person in the climate space, you know, feels like sometimes we're shouting from the rooftops and no one's hearing. And it's just like saying it within our own communities, like people who are experiencing the climate crisis are talking about it and have been talking about it. And Indigenous communities have been talking about it for decades. And now it's finally time that we bring it in, bring everybody involved, because everyone's going to be impacted. So getting rid of that silence and allowing, like you said before, to be more normalized of talking about it, not normalizing the climate crisis, but normalizing talking about it is so important. So I also feel like sometimes like there might be skeptics that say something like climate change doesn't belong in every genre of movie. But knowing what you know now from this study and from the results, what would you say to somebody who has that opinion?
Well, the climate reality check is very intentionally minimalist. So the test does not require that every film center climate change, and it doesn't prescribe what kinds of stories people are telling. It doesn't prescribe what stories people should want to watch. So we want people to feel freedom with this. We want writers especially to do what they already do best, which is write a great story. At the same time, we see how it can organically fit into most stories without being shoehorned or forced or feel like, you know, you're shoving facts at people because of you know, what we've talked about already, that climate change touches every part of our lives. So it feels like it can be part of every story. It doesn't need to be, but we do hope that 50% of stories pass the climate reality check by 2027. And we really think that's an achievable goal. You know, we're at 9.6 right now. And I do think we need that exponential change within the next few years.
Yeah, and as a climate activist, I'm like, let's get everything on climate. I can hear climate in everything. I'm like, let's make it everywhere, because I'm not opposed to that at all. So how can Hollywood increase its climate representation in media? What are some things they can do or that they've done already that is successful and has seen success? So what do you think of that?
Yeah. We definitely have, you know, recommendations for people who want to start integrating climate. I do think it's starting from where they are. So what do you already care about? What issues are you already writing about? And finding that intersection with climate. So we don't need anyone to become a climate expert. We don't need stories to be all about climate. It really is, you know, starting where you are and starting with, yeah, where your heart is, what story you're drawn to tell. And there's absolutely a way that climate could be a part of that. I do think that Hollywood can center more diverse creators and also center more diverse climate characters. So again, we found through this report that the majority of characters being portrayed as caring about climate are white and older and middle and a male. So again, just reflecting that reality, going back to that intersection, and also not trying to take on the world. I think there's ways to integrate climate into the background. There's ways to weave it into comedy, into characters' jokes. So I think really starting with where you are and what you care about is the main goal.
And I love that you said we don't need to be experts. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. I feel like so many people think you need to have a degree. And, you know, I did get a degree, but that's not the only way to go. You know, there's so many other things. And people are like, oh, well, that can be you. You can do that. And it's like, no, even with a degree, I don't know everything on every climate topic. I'm not an expert in everything. And it's like, I think it's so important to know that you don't need a degree. You don't need to be working in the field of climate specifically. You can just integrate things in your daily life. Like, a lot of sustainability is just using less, consuming less, and doing what we always used to do before colonialism and before consumerism and capitalism. So I really think it's so important that you said that, you know, it's really important for people to know you don't need to be an expert to know about climate or to do something.
Yeah. As far as showing sustainability on screen, we also love showing solutions, showing composting, climate-friendly behaviors, as long as it's not putting the onus fully on the individual to save us, you know. So those individual actions are incredible and they set a precedent. And we also want to highlight systems change and collective action, protests. So those are another amazing way to show climate in addition that in ways that will truly shift us.
Yeah. Snaps to that. It is a system issue. And it's like, I always tell people, everyone always says, like, ask me, I have a lot of people in my life and my family and friends will say, oh, well, you know, does it make a difference if I compost, or does it make a difference if I recycle this? Anything you do can make a difference, and anything we do collectively can make an even bigger difference. But what we really also need to do as we're working on our own individual lives is changing the system too, not getting distracted and yelling at someone for using a plastic straw or using a plastic water bottle, but interrogating the systems that allowed these things to get to where we are right now. So again, thank you for bringing that up. It's super important. And I think that's another thing that media can help with. So it's super important.
Yeah. We often tell writers, you know, it's become a trope that a climate activist is kind of the butt of the joke, always, like, you know, nagging, or like you were saying, picking on someone for using a straw. But really, that's not our reality, I don't think. There's not too many climate nags. So could we flip the script there and, you know, make the butt of the joke about the climate villain, the fossil fuel industry, the people who are littering or driving SUVs? You know, could it be the other way around? And the, you know, and climate activists and, you know, climate heroes are certainly not saints, and they should be as flawed as any character. And that's what makes great television and great films. Yeah. And I'm not so sure that the poking fun at people who pick up garbage is the way to go either. So
yeah, the amount of times I've been called like a tree hugger, and now that's my identity. Yes, like I will go hug a tree. But I think it's like interesting, as you said, you know, we're always at the butt of jokes. And I honestly have felt like, for me personally, everyone has their own experience, I'm sure, but the people who have been the most naggy in quotes to me have been people who don't really care about sustainability or climate. And they're like, oh, well, you're a climate activist and you're using a plastic bottle? Like, that's what I get all of the time. And it's like, I mean, you can't do that. That's not helping anyone. It's not helping. And I don't see that from people who are climate activists. I more see that from people who want to just make fun of climate activists for doing something that they would say isn't sustainable. And maybe it isn't, but maybe that's all they have access to at the moment. Or, you know, we all can't just change at a flip of a dime. Can't change every habit. You know, there are things that need to change, but it's not going to happen like overnight. So I think that's something important as well. Something I like to ask all my guests is, what brings you hope in the climate space?
This work really does. You know, I do tell people, you know, I'm sure someone wiser said it better, but if you want to not be anxious about the climate crisis, then act on it. So I do think the friends I've made in this space, the laughter that we find despite it all, or inside of this, looking at the absurdity of our systems, and being able to laugh about it and create funny and warm, heartfelt content, that's what certainly gives me hope, and that there's just community to be found. I do think that it will all come down to community and care and how we're going to uplift each other. The other thing that gave me hope was the strike, the writer's strike, just feeling that collective action, picketing together, and just seeing the link between that and what we need in the climate movement, and that we need everyone on board, and finding the threads between the labor movement and the climate movement for everyday people. And
yeah,
makes me hopeful. 100%.
That's like, I love the collective activism, collective action, all important. So I love that you brought that up too. You know, it's so, it's not all on our shoulders on one person. You know, it's something that we need to do together. And like you said, it's going to come down to community and collective activism. I can't say that word. Wow. Struggling to say that right now. But is there anything else that you want to add or touch on before we wrap up?
No, I think that really covers it. I guess I wanted to know from you, I'm sure you've touched on this in earlier podcasts, I'm working my way backwards, but how you went from angry to hopeful in that transition, because I feel like everyone has a story that could be more motivation for Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, when I started college, I was always into the climate crisis and always into the environment, but I wasn't really like into it. I was focused on other things. And then when I really started getting into it and really started seeing how it's impacting people, the planet, wildlife, and systems, I started getting like super angry. I was just like, why is this happening? Why have we gotten to this point? How have we gotten to this point? And the more I dug into it, the less hopeful I was feeling. And I think that's a lot of people when they start out, you know, they're just like, well, how do we get here? That's like just a reaction. And anger isn't always a bad thing, right? Even as a hopeful person now, I feel anger. And I think that's, again, we all feel emotions and it's okay to feel that, but how we turn our anger and how we use our anger and how we use that to create hope and to create solutions instead of me just sitting in my room at night, doom scrolling, you know, it wasn't helping anybody. And when I started the podcast, I always said, you know, stay angry and create positive change. And it was always like bringing on people who wanted to bring hope and solutions. And I was like, I don't feel like that anger represents who I am. And I don't think it represents who a lot of people are. We just have that feeling of anger, but we're doing great and amazing things. So I changed the name to be more relatable and to, so people know, you know, you can still experience that anger, but here's how you can create that hope for yourself, for others, and make a better future for us all. So that's kind of my journey in a short little description, because there's a lot that went into it. But for me, that was kind of more of my path. And I think during the pandemic as well, being alone, like sitting, I mean, I was with my family, but, you know, being isolated from my friends, I was in college, and now I'm go from college to home, and we're all just kind of isolated from each other. And it's like, I just was in my head, like, I'm just so angry. I'm so angry about this. I'm so angry about the injustices going on in the world that have been going on, that continue to go on. And yeah, that's kind of how the podcast started. But then I shifted, as I said, to this more hopeful and solutions-based lens.
Yeah, I love that. And even from that anger, there's action and response. And yeah, it's a great motivator too. So,
well, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. And again, did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, for anyone listening and interested, I will have links in the description of the podcast and this episode, so you can find Good Energy and the resources that they put out. So yeah, everyone stay tuned for that. So thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today.
You're welcome. So happy to be here.
And that wraps up this episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. Again, like we mentioned, if you want to access some of the resources that we discussed or read the report that just came out from Good Energy, feel free to head to the description of this episode where you will find all of those links. And as always, thank you for listening, and remember to stay hopeful and create positive change.